You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
You're about to listen to episode 699 on the Flip Empire Show. My name's Alex Pardo. Appreciate you tuning in to this particular podcast episode where I have the opportunity to interview my good friend, Scott Smith. Now, Scott is not an educator or a thought leader or guru or anything like that. The guy's just an awesome, down-to-earth, real life, successful real estate investor and entrepreneur who's out there making things happen. And I think you're going to be really inspired by this podcast episode. So if you're ever anybody who has considered making a move or a shift into something that is unknown, if you've ever been challenged with embracing and leaning into uncertainty, this podcast episode is for you. If you're also somebody who's a single family investor and is interested in transitioning into a different asset class like storage, then this podcast episode is also for you. Scott is somebody who I've known, as you're about to hear, for a number of years. Like many of my friends, we met at a mastermind and we built a friendship and a relationship. Just super bright individual. His expertise is when it comes to seller financing and creating and generating assets that spit off cash flow. You're about to hear how he started building a single family rental portfolio early on and how he quickly found that was not as passive as he thought it would be. He transitioned into selling notes and built up about a note portfolio of 20 notes or so. And that was also not passive. So he ultimately made the leap into self-storage, found his first deal on the MLS, got a ridiculous 30,000 square foot facility for just under $550,000. And the equity that he was able to accumulate from his single family investing really helped propel him into storage. And today, he's got a storage portfolio of about 100,000 or so square feet that completely funds his lifestyle. He's able to live his vision. And so you're going to get a lot out of this particular podcast episode. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you're notified every Monday when new Flip Empire shows are released. And with that being said, let's hop right into episode 699. With my man, Scott Smith. Appreciate you guys for tuning in to another masterclass on the Flip Empire Show. If this is your first time joining, I want to welcome you. My name is Alex Pardo. Super grateful to have been the host of this show for the last 7 years. This is episode 699, so we're coming up on almost 700 here. And I'm always excited to host this show because I have the opportunity to kind of share my journey, the wins, the losses, the lessons learned. And I have the ability to connect with incredible people like my next guest, my good friend, Scott Smith. He's just a regular, awesome dude out there who has been very purposeful and intentional about the vision he wants and he has for his life. And then leveraging real estate, leveraging business and entrepreneurship to help him live out that vision. So on today's podcast, we're going to get into some really good stuff that I believe is going to inspire you. It's going to help regardless of where you are in your journey, whether you're getting started, whether you are in single family or another asset class like storage, regardless of what you want to do, I think the principles that you're about to hear, the mindset, the stories, the lessons learned, the challenges that Scott and I share, I think are really going to help you. And even if they don't resonate with you because you can't relate, maybe because you don't have a particular type of business, again, I still think the underlying principles are things that you can draw from in this podcast. At least that's our goal and our aim. So with that being said, my man, Scott, welcome to the podcast, brother. I know you and I have been talking about this for a bit. I'm grateful to have you on, man. You and I have been good friends for a number of years. We were part of another mastermind. I want to say back in 2018 or so. I remember we sat next to each other at a pretty intimate mastermind and we struck up a conversation that led to a friendship. And at the time, I know you had a thriving single family business. And I walked away from our conversation saying, damn, I need to connect with this guy when it comes to seller financing and just creative deal structuring. Like, you're really, really good at that. And I don't want to reveal too much early on, but you since have transitioned into a very successful storage business that provides cash flow for you and your family to just live very nice and live out your vision. So with all that being said, dude, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Alex. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Love it. Let's kind of start with early on in your journey. Did you come from the corporate world? Like, what were you doing prior to real estate? And then the second part of that question is, what was it that eventually that got you into real estate?
Yes, I had a pretty good career in corporate. I worked in technology for a while, ended up going into staffing and recruiting. and worked in that industry for a good 10 years and did pretty well. I kind of specialized in sourcing, which is kind of the research part of the recruiting process and kind of interviewing people and kind of passing them along to the recruiter. I got really good at that. It's kind of when Boolean searches and kind of deep diving into the internet, and built a really good career with that. That went well for a long time, and I get to work remotely and continue to do well with that. But what I learned was whenever the economy took a dive, each time the economy took a dive, so did all the hiring. It was just a kind of a cyclical process with the recruiting. So when the economy is good, people are hiring. When it's bad, it slows down. So I think in 2009 is whenever the economy took a dive. And that was kind of where I started making the transition to becoming a full-time real estate investor.
Okay. What I'm hearing is there were circumstances around the economy that affected your 9-to-5, your corporate job, that was the catalyst for change. And I bring that up because I was just talking to my daughter this morning. So Scott, every time my daughter comes to me with a challenge or something that's going on in her life, as a parent, I take it as an opportunity, right? Try to remember that there's a teaching moment here. And I was sharing with her just this morning how I truly believe life isn't what happens to you, but how you respond to what happens to you. So the reason I bring up that is because we're all faced with different challenges in our life. And you and I'm sure, have spoken to a lot of people, I know I have, that want to make a change, whether it's leave their 9-to-5 to get into real estate, whether they want to start a business. I know a lot of successful single family investors that want to transition into either multifamily or storage or other commercial asset classes. And the things that happen to us, I think, can be inspiration. They can be a catalyst for change. And yet oftentimes I find that people revert to what they know and what's comfortable. So at that time for you, was there any fear around making a career shift and starting a business, getting into real estate? And if so, what was it that gave you that encouragement, that inspiration to go take a leap and bet on yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I was petrified in a sense, but two things happened in 2008, 2009. 2008, my mom died. And then within about 3 to 4 months, I lost my corporate job, second round of layoffs. So there was a lot of motivation there to do something different in my life. And as scared as I was, I realized that if I kept working for someone, that I was only going to be able to do as well as they would allow me to do. And even though I was doing really well in staffing and recruiting, I saw the people around me that were also doing really well, but it almost seemed inevitable that there was going to be layoffs and different things. So I was motivated. I think I was just at a point in my life where I wasn't going to take no for an answer. And I think that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. And did you always know it was going to be real estate, or was it about real estate that you said, okay, this is what I'm going to transition into?
In 2001, I think when we had the other downturn in the economy, it was around 2000, 2001 with the high-tech bubble. And then 2008, 2009, we had another bubble. In 2001, I got my real estate license and I started doing real estate kind of part-time on the side. And I did that for a while. I thought I wanted to be a professional real estate realtor. And what I realized in that process is that the way my mind works is I was seeing deals that other people also were seeing, but that they weren't acting on. And so I realized that, or at least I thought in my mind at the time, that I could be a realtor or I could be a real estate investor. And there are two different skill sets and two different mindsets. But if I kept my real estate license, that I could use that access to the MLS to find deals to be able to do them. But at the time, as a realtor, you're on 100% commission. So it's really hard to get qualified with a bank loan. So I went back to work for a while. I kept my license active and I started just learning, reading books. In 2008, I went to this Armando Montalago flip. You probably remember him from back in the day.
I do, yeah, from the show, right? The flipping show?
And so in 2009, I signed up for his bus tour and went out to California. And we just spent a couple of days looking at and evaluating houses that needed remodeling. And so that was a great education. And I just kind of dove in. I was like, okay. I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but it made sense to me in my mind that if I bought houses as rentals and I could get $200 or $300 a house is what I had in my head, that I could get 20 houses and then I could completely replace the income I had and I would never have to go back to work for someone.
So it sounds like you had a plan going in, and again, you were going to be a buy and hold investor. You wanted 20 rental properties. Was that from the period that you got into real estate, 2009, 2010, up until the point that you transitioned eventually into storage? Is that what the business ultimately, what the model ended up being? Is you were acquiring a lot of rentals, or were you also doing wholesaling or fix and flipping, things of that nature?
Yeah, in the beginning, I was just started out as just wanting to own rental properties. So after I left my corporate job, early 2009, I cashed out my retirement account and started buying houses, owner finance in Waco, really. The Austin market had gotten so expensive. And so I realized without a job and at the price point the houses were, that banks weren't going to lend me money. I heard no time and time again. Bank of America, you know, Chase, all the big banks were like, no. But I found that the community banks, the smaller banks, they were willing to work with me. They were willing to do that. So what I did is I started buying owner finance houses with little money down, and they were all in just pretty rough shape. So I started remodeling them, doing as much as I could myself, and then hiring people out for the parts I couldn't do. And then I would just build that rental portfolio one property at a time.
Okay. And was the majority of that rental portfolio, Scott, built with owner financing?
Yes, it was.
Where did you learn that? Because that's a particular skill set, correct?
Yeah, there's a guy in Austin named David Buttress. That was his model. He had literally hundreds of houses he would buy and then turn around and sell them all on owner finance, on notes. So I started buying them from him because he had a lot of houses in Waco at the time. And so I was buying those houses directly from him. And then what I learned was I could buy the houses and I could do the work and get it going that way. But then I could refinance it with the local banks. And so that was kind of my saving grace to get out of that particular situation, because there was a timeline on it and his interest rates were higher. But I was able to purchase the houses that way. So once I got pretty substantial portfolio, I refinanced a lot of that with the bank.
Okay.
And sometimes I could get cash on and buy more or get money to do more repairs and go that route. So that's really how I got started.
Got it. I'm curious your opinion here, brother. And I don't know if you would do things any different if you were to go back. But when I have conversation with people that are getting started, and I ask them a bunch of questions, because I find that there's never a one particular answer that's a one size fits all. The answer is usually it depends. So I have people that sometimes ask me, hey, how do I get started? Or how do I do this? I always ask them, well, what are your goals? What is it you want to accomplish? Do you have a vision? I ask them all these types of questions. But 9 out of 10 times, if somebody is in need of income, right, to feed their family and they need money to live, I don't advise and recommend that people get into buy and hold investing if what they need is income, right? Because in my mind, a couple hundred dollars, $300, even $500 a month, unless you have volume, unless you have a large portfolio, it tends to not significantly move the needle. And then you and I both know that these houses require maintenance and time and energy. And if you have a roof that needs to be replaced or a furnace or an AC or this or that, it requires money, and then your cash flow for the year can get wiped out. So I always tell people, if you want to get into real estate, I think wholesaling, it's good and bad, right? It's a low barrier of entry, which is good. And it's a low barrier of entry, which is bad, right? But people can get started wholesaling or fixing and flipping, generate some income, have enough cash that you can then start to acquire assets. Now, I went the complete opposite direction in that I did that, but I never started acquiring assets, even though I was having a bunch of cash coming in. So like, I made the mistake. It took me too long to start acquiring assets. And that's something that I've openly shared freely on this podcast. Do you agree or disagree? Not that there's a right or wrong, but I'm kind of curious if you would co-sign with, hey, if you need cash, don't start buying rentals right away. Or would you say, no, I think there's a way that can still work?
I completely agree with you. It was a grind and it was tough. I'm not going to lie about that. I mean, I always had enough money to pay everyone else, but I didn't have enough money to pay myself. And so for years, I mean, I really struggled and I worked so hard to fix these properties up and to finance them with whatever I had to do. And I did struggle for many years. Eventually read a book called Profit First, which kind of helped me change my mindset on, instead of paying everyone else first, and me being at the end of the line, I started paying myself first. Things started to change for me. But in the beginning, I'm not sure I could have even done that. But I did start kind of realizing that owning a lot of rentals is a big expense. I mean, all of mine were older, so there was always something that was breaking. So I would get to a certain point in the month, and I go, okay, this is going to be a good month. And I'm finally going to get to be where I want to be financially. And like you said, the plumbing would go out, or the backup, or the AC would go out, and there would go my cash flow for the month. And that happened. So to the point where I learned that lesson that Now, possibly if I would have bought all newer properties, that could have been a little different, but I wasn't in a position to do that. So I bought the older stuff because it was easier with the financing, but not until I started wholesaling some properties along the way and flipping some properties did that start to change for me.
Yeah. Got it. Before we transition into why you decided to get into storage, looking back on your kind of career as a single family investor, what were some of the biggest challenges and lessons learned as a result of those challenges?
For the just challenges just in general?
Yeah, just in general of getting into real estate, buying rentals on owner finance, wholesaling, fixing and flipping. Like when you look at that period of your life, what was it that you would share with people like, hey, these are some of the mistakes I made, or these are some of the things I learned as a result of getting into that business, growing that? Because sometimes people think that it's a simple business, but it tends to not be easy at times. And I think as humans, we tend to overcomplicate things. So I know I made a ton of mistakes early on, in the middle, and even now, like I still make mistakes that I learn from. So it's a process. I'm curious if you can think back and reflect on some of your experiences. Does anything pop out in particular that you would say, man, I would do that differently, or this is something I learned that I can share with people listening?
Yeah, I would have probably not focused on rentals so much. I mean, in the end, it turned out well because the equity that I had from those rentals helped me launch into other businesses, but it was a struggle from an income perspective. I mean, you're going to have challenges. There's going to be things that come up that you don't expect. I mean, I have so many stories, but one property was a duplex next to another duplex that I had purchased in downtown Waco. The lady that owned it didn't manage it properly. So she didn't want me to have it really for whatever reason, I guess, because I'd owned the whole block. So she pushed that out as far as she could. Well, in the meantime, there was a backup with the plumbing and stuff. I mean, I know we're getting into some bolts here, but, and so she told the tenant to call the city. They'll take care of it. I don't want to deal with it. And they did take care of it. They green tagged the house. So literally the day after I bought it, the house was green tagged, which means now I got to go through a formal process with the city to do update everything in the house. So I just bought this house. I just closed on it literally the next day. And I called the guy and he goes, well, if you had called me the day before, I wouldn't have green tagged it. I would have worked something out with you. Now I was freaking out. I was like, okay, now that's all the money I have. I don't have any money to fix this house. How am I going to do this? So I prayed about it and I talked to David Buttress again and he loaned me the money on it. Huh. But he took the equity out on another house that I had free and clear. But anyway, it all worked out and I was able to get it and stuff. So there's always just going to be constant things that you're going to have to deal with, expenses that you don't plan on. So I do feel like it's a tough way to get started and it's not going to be as easy. It's kind of easy when you just have a few, but when you start getting a lot more, that's when all the stuff starts kind of adding up and it does turn into a full-time job.
Yeah, it can. It can. That's why the property management aspect of having a single family rental portfolio or really any asset that needs to be managed, but having the right property management system, whether that's in-house or you outsource it to a third-party property manager, even though I know you don't use a third-party property manager on the storage side, I can tell you from my experience, having the right one is critical. But either way, just how are you going to manage the asset? To your point, Scott, if you just have like one single family rental, probably not a big deal, but you start acquiring several of these and you need to make sure that you treat it like a business. You got to have systems and processes, but it's certainly not passive. It's not passive, right?
Yeah, the lesson I learned is there's nothing passive about real estate, especially rentals and duplexes and things like that. I mean, can be further from the truth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I think there's ways that it can, real estate can be passive. If you invest in other people's deals, there's ways in which it can be passive if you're a lender, but there's still some work that has to be done at some point in the process, whether it's on the front end due diligence. But yeah, owning rentals and being a landlord and managing yourself, even with some of the single family rentals I have where I have third party management, I still have to manage the property management company or somebody does. So it's never truly as passive as you might think it is. I think that's a big myth that people are fed that they swallow and buy into. It's just not the case.
And we tried that a few times. I just never found the right person, I guess, to manage them for us. And that being my primary income source at the time, I was probably hovering over them. They probably didn't. I just kind of watched them pretty closely and it just seemed like they were taking it a lot longer. I mean, they're managing a lot of properties. You're just one of their properties. But so anyway.
Right. For anybody listening that has ever had the thought of wanting to do something else within real estate. Maybe you're a wholesaler, maybe you're a fix and flip investor, buy and hold, or a combination, and you want to get into larger deals. That could be storage, that could be multifamily, it could be retail, I mean, the warehouses. There's a lot of different commercial asset classes you can get into. We're about to start getting to the part of the conversation where I think you can draw from how Scott was able to bridge the gap from being a single family investor to ultimately building a successful storage portfolio and using that business to fund his lifestyle and everything. So Scott, I want to kind of start with something you said. You said the equity, I heard you say earlier on in the show, the equity from your single family rentals helped propel you into this new phase of your business, which was storage. Can you just talk about how you built that bridge and what made you decide to leave something that you had built that was successful to an asset class being storage that you really didn't know a whole lot about?
Yes. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take just one step back and kind of shift to owner finance a little bit.
Yeah, please.
So as I was owning all these rentals, I was just realizing how much work they were. And I realized if I could sell them owner finance on a note, I could do several things. I could not have to do the repairs anymore. I could get a down payment. I could get a monthly note and I would end up doing better. Then my focus shifted to owner finance. Okay, well, if I have 20 owner finance notes, then that's better than having 20 rentals. So I did start shifting over to that and slowly realized that people pay those off. People refinance those. People give those back. And I never wanted them back. I know a lot of investors want the properties back when they sell them on a note, but for me, I didn't really want that. But as I kind of realized that part of my model needed to change as well, then we shifted doing more flips and stuff. That kind of led me down the path, realizing what can I do that would allow me to go into different space that would not require as much work, that I could kind of systemize more without as many repairs. Mm-hmm. And so do you want me to go into?
I'm just curious, like, so you started shifting and you had this note portfolio essentially that was spitting off a bunch of cash flow. You could have probably just kept doing that, but what was it that propelled you to say, hey, I want to transition and I want to start getting into a different asset class. I want to get into storage.
Part of it was we were having to deal with the people. It felt like in some level, it started feeling a little bit like rentals again, because we didn't have a big enough portfolio to hire a property management company. It's maybe not entirely true. We could have done that.
You had about 20 notes, you said?
Yeah. So we could have hired a note servicer, but I was kind of basing some of that on kind of my experience with property management. I kind of wanted to keep that in house, but it felt like there was always a bit of work to it, more than kind of I wanted to deal with. And my wife was kind of doing, at this point, she was doing all the accounting and kind of management and stuff because she had left her primary job and she was not really enjoying managing the notes anymore. Yeah. And it started, you're constantly having to send out reports and updating amortization schedules, paying the taxes. We paid the taxes and then collected. So there was kind of a lot more involved in it. There wasn't really a way to automate it. And it wasn't passive either, which I thought it would be, but I realized it wouldn't. But the biggest thing for me was like, even if I had 20 notes now, by the end of next year, I'd probably have 15. So people were paying these off or giving them back or refinance. And so if I wasn't willing to keep that up, I just realized long-term, those were going to go away.
Yeah. And you had very little control, right? Somebody wants to pay off the note, they're going to pay off the note.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and you were happy when they paid it off because you got whatever that spread was.
Yeah.
But I was kind of thinking, okay, down the road in 10 years or so, I'm not going to want to keep finding houses, because with those houses, you still have to fix them up. You still have to find them. You still have to put in the work. Instead of flipping them and getting the immediate payoff, you just put it into kind of long-term, but you don't really, like you said, you don't really have any control over that. And so as that portfolio started going down, I started thinking, okay, I keep hearing about this thing called storage. I had even gone to one of the rental conferences and paid for a storage meeting and stuff. I never followed up on it, but it was in the back of my mind. I need to look into it at some point, something that would work for me. Would it be a long-term solution, a long-term fit? And then kind of watch this guy named Mike Wagner, which you know well.
Yep, and, I might know him.
Yeah, and Ken Holmes jumped in there as well and started doing really well. And he'd been a long-term house flipper. Like, that was his full-time job. He was also my coach in Life and Air. Seeing him and how well he did and how quickly he went into that and how much faster he was successful with it. But before I did all of that, I started doing some flipping as well and started flipping some of the houses that were my rentals. one of the properties we bought, we turned into an Airbnb. So my wife had left her job to manage the Airbnb and to help with the family business. And then that was right when COVID hit. I mean, we had everything online and COVID hit, and we went from the bookings going straight up to the bookings going straight down. That worked out pretty well. And then we had a flood over there. Like, it froze, and then the pipes underneath the house, and we just remodeled it like 1 year earlier. They had a slow leak that we didn't know about. And so we had to redo all the flooring down to the studs again. And we had just done that 1 year earlier.
Yeah.
And so between that and just the other work that was involved in managing the Airbnbs, we thought, well, you know, if we sell these Airbnbs, that would give us the income to buy storage. And so right about that time, one of the properties that had on a note, the lady gave back to me. And I was like, oh, great. I have to fix this house up. This will be the third time I remodel this house. And I was like, well, I'm just going to sell it. And so I put it on the market. The first time ever, this lady didn't show up to closing. I mean, didn't show up, didn't reach out, nothing. And I was like, wow, that's pretty strange. Never had that happen before.
Yeah, I can't say that's ever happened to me either.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll put it back on the market and we're going to sell it under finance. And then the realtor's like, well, I need you to fix all these things. And I mean, part of it is under financing. The house isn't always in perfect shape, but you're providing the house plus the under financing, and it's livable most of the time. I mean, they're doing a little sweat equity to kind of for that as well. And so that house went under contract and it fell through. I was like, wow, two times. And then the third time we got it under contract. And I was like, well, I really hope this one goes through. In the meantime, I was on the MLS and I found the storage deal. I talked to my coach Ken about it. And he's like, if you don't put an offer on that deal, I'm going to put an offer on it. I was like, you know, Ken, that's, yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. That sounds like Ken. And by the way, for those listening, it's not uncommon to have a commercial asset like storage improperly, or I should say incorrectly listed on the multiple listing service, right? But it happens sometimes. And usually when it does, that presents an opportunity. Sometimes it's a realtor that's accustomed to the single family world and they come across a facility. Maybe it's one of their clients that has this, and then they list it on the MLS when that should go on a commercial listing service like a LoopNet or Crexy or one of those types of services. So there's an opportunity and a gold nugget for you that Scott just shared is, if you want to get into multifamily or storage or whatever, and you have access to the multiple listing service, put up keywords that say like storage or apartment building or multifamily. Sometimes you'll come across these assets incorrectly listed on the MLS. And oftentimes that presents an opportunity because either the realtor and or the owner just doesn't really know what they have sometimes.
Yes, true. And so it was on the MLS. I found it. In the meantime, they dropped it $50,000. The price. And so
what was the asking price at this point?
It was $550,000.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the deal before you keep going. Like, how many square feet was this facility? How many units?
Yeah, this was 30,600 square feet. Yeah. It wasn't all like in one location, but all the buildings were really close to each other and it had been owned by the same family for quite a while, 252 doors. Okay. And so I got it for pretty good price. But right about the time that I put an offer on it, I guess one of the other commercial investors locally had seen the deal and he also put an offer on it. So we were competing on the offer and we were talking about the price and all that.
Yeah, man, I'd love to kind of do a case study here and like talk about the deal.
Yeah. So I had it listed for $550,000 on the MLS, 30,600 square feet of storage, which you and I know is a good deal. And so in the meantime, they lowered it down to 500,000. At that time, I had this other property under contract for sale that had just fallen through three times. And that was the only way I would have enough money to put down on that because they want 20% down.
Yeah.
And or my bank did, but they were willing to finance it because I had a good relationship with the same local community bank, which I'm a big advocate of community banks and building those relationships.
Yeah.
But the only way I could do it is if this deal closed. So I got under contract, very similar offer to the other party, and they accepted our offer. And fortunately, by the grace of God, it closed. So this was held up three times for reasons that I had no idea about.
Wow.
Actually closed in a time to where I found another deal and I had the money for that down payment. There's no other way I couldn't have orchestrated that, but it worked out that way.
Yeah.
And so I was able to close on that.
I'm curious. Let me jump in for a second, Scott. Sure. Had that deal not closed, it would have jeopardized your ability to close this incredible I mean, 30,000 square foot facility for $550 is ridiculous, 100%. Right? Yeah. I mean, a price per square foot, that's crazy. Did you have a plan B in the event that that other deal that had fallen through three times not closed? Or were you just kind of like operating with faith and saying, hey, I'm putting all my eggs in this basket?
All my eggs were in my basket. I have 100 grand sitting around. I mean, it's possible.
Knowing you, you could have easily raised that though, right?
Yeah. I could have reached out and I would have done that. Reached out to the group, to the network of people that we know, and I would have been able to raise it that way.
Yeah.
But at the time I was kind of leaning into it, thinking that this needed to work, this would work, and it did ultimately work. Well, I was able to get that. It was just the same amount as what I needed for a down payment. In that sense, it kind of worked out really well.
Yeah.
And got me into storage.
Yeah. And there's a lot to be said there, man. So kudos to you. Like someone told me this a long time ago and it came up in conversation recently. I've really just been reflecting on it. When your why is big enough, the how will be revealed to you. Too many people are always trying to wait for the stars to align before they do something or take an uncomfortable step or some type of leap. But I think momentum and action is rewarded. That's what I heard with you, is that the fact that this deal had fallen through three times, it would have been very easy to say, oh, let me go in a different direction or forget it, right? But you kept at it, not knowing if it was going to close. It required some level of action for you to put in an offer, evaluate that storage deal, connect with your coach, right? Like your action was rewarded. And ultimately, I find that things tend to unfold and happen the way they're supposed to. The universe will reward your action, I think, is what I'm ultimately trying to share with you guys. So stop waiting for things to be perfect before you act. What is that saying? It's you have to be, then do, then have. And too many people have that equation reversed, is that they first need to see it, touch it, feel it, have it, and then they'll become the type of person that can have those things when they have that equation reversed. So be, do, have.
I agree. The harder I work, the luckier I get.
There you go.
Just leaning into it, not having all the answers, just knowing this is the direction I want to go in.
By the way, Scott, it's not the only thing I'll edit or add to that is it's not just about working hard, but you were also working smart. We know a lot of people that work hard 9 to 5 and they don't get anywhere. So hard work, I think, is an ingredient, but it's everything else you've shared. The fact that you've invested in yourself through coaching and mentorship, you've been part of masterminds, you had a vision for your life. You knew what you wanted. You had a plan. You were working it. So there's an element, also an ingredient of not just working hard, but working smart.
True. That's so true. I mean, and yesterday I was just kind of looking back at my visions over the years, like, cause I have one each year, I kind of date it. And so I was just going back and looking at the vision I had for 2015, for 2017, for 2019, and just seeing that. And there's a lot of work that goes into creating a vision, a lot of time. And most people, or a lot of people, don't take that time or make that time, but it's really important. It has a big prediction on how your life turns out and what you get out of your life. Just the mental capacity or the mental thinking to just kind of go through those steps and look at that and read that and kind of update that on a regular basis is really important. And it really helps things happen in your life. And so many things I've just put in that, I mean, they happen. They come true. And I don't believe they're going to come true. I put it in my vision. I'm going to own my first self-storage facility in 2020. Now, I didn't have the money to put the down payment for a self-storage facility. I didn't even know where one was, you know, that I could buy. I didn't have all the answers. I didn't understand what that meant to be able to make that work. But I wrote it down in my vision and I read it. And then, like you said, the universe just kicks into gear and you do your part and magical things happen.
Yeah. 100%. And then just the communities that you've immersed yourself in, the people you've surrounded yourself with that are championing you to success and walking alongside you, I think is a big part of it. Like success isn't achieved. It's not a one man or a one woman sport. So don't always try to be the one to have to figure everything out. Like, again, to your point, Scott, you wrote it down, you believed it, you could visualize it. You didn't know how it was going to happen. You didn't have the money. You didn't have the experience or the knowledge, but all that is obtainable, but you acted. So I'm curious, that what does the storage portfolio look like today for you? Because I know you live off of that portfolio, right?
Yes. Gradually, like last year, we sold our notes, the remaining notes we had, we sold them to a note investor who that's all they do. I'm letting my brokerage go with the house flipping business and that sort of thing. And I just kind of narrowed it down. instead of being wide, I've kind of decided to go more narrow. And so now we're 100% in on self-storage. We have that facility that we bought in Texas, the one I was just telling you about. We bought another facility in that same town that was about 15,000 square feet. So now we're at about 46,000 square feet in that same town. And so we kind of branded it under the same business name. So yeah, we're the largest storage, you know, facility in that town. And we bought another one in Mississippi, in a small town in Mississippi. And we're actually in the process of doing our first development now.
Right.
We're adding on about 17,000 square feet, two buildings on the same. We had an acre when we bought it that was empty that sat right next to the main one. And this is the main one in town. People love this location. It's close to the baseball parks and downtown and everything. So we're adding on to that right now for the first time. So that'll put us right under 100,000, I think.
Yeah, that's incredible, man. And do you mind sharing just kind of ballpark? Because I know people are curious, what kind of cash flow? By the way, I didn't ask you this. Are these all debt-free or do you have any type of like?
No, we have debt on all these. I mean, we're probably 50% probably on equity and what they're worth. So 40 to 50%. Just the same strategy as what I did with rental properties, you know, buy value add properties that were off the market. That always seems to be the best places, but it takes the most work to find them because they're not available. But yeah, we have going on and stuff. Our cash flow is pretty good on those. We're able to live. Our goal is to have 3 times our income level needed for what we need to live on. And we live conservative and we've achieved that.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Well, last couple questions here as we start to wind down the show. I really appreciate you being so open about kind of your journey and just sharing. And I know people are drawing and extracting a lot of just valuable information from this podcast. A couple kind of quick rapid fire questions for you. Sure. What's the book that has had the biggest impact on you, either personally or on your business?
Personally or on my business? Well, Profit First comes to mind. I'll say Rich Dad, Poor Dad really kind of started changing my thinking. Those are two of the main ones that come to mind. Was it 4-Hour Work Week? Kind of got me into thinking about how can I just not be the person that has to do, you know, everything. And
you've mentioned 3 books that have also had a big impact on me as well. And then last question for you, man, is, and this is going to be a loaded question for you.
Okay.
So if you need to take a couple seconds to kind of think about it, but best piece of advice you've ever received?
Don't give up. It's not going to be easy. No one owes you anything. I mean, what's out there? The opportunities are here. We live in a great country. If you want something, you just have to go out and get it. And it's there for you. You just have to believe it. And you have to get the right support. Join a mastermind. It may seem expensive and difficult or whatever up front, but eventually it will be so worth it.
I think that's fantastic advice. It's simple and yet it's packed with a lot of wisdom. But nothing great comes from being average. Living in mediocrity. I don't think we were built and created to be average and live in mediocrity. I think we all have unique gifts and talents, and it's our job to multiply those and to share those with the world. And that comes from stepping out into the uncomfort or into what's uncomfortable and stepping out into what the unknown is. Sometimes I think we need to lean in and embrace uncertainty. And too many people want to live average, or sometimes people's mouths talk a bigger game than what they're actually willing to go out there and do. In other words, people say they want X, Y, and Z. They say they want to achieve freedom and they want to travel and do all these types of things, but their actions, their desires are stronger than what they're actually willing to go out there and do. And again, I think the universe is going to reward action and momentum. And I think you're a shining example of that, man, just through what we've talked about in this podcast, dude. So I want to recognize you for being the type of person who's going to go out there and not just talk it, but act it. And then coming on here and sharing that, because one of the things that, Scott, I don't think I've shared with you, but this is episode 699. And to this day, I have the same mindset I did when I had the first one. I said, I don't know how many people are going to listen to this, but if I can reach one person, something I say or something you say or a guest says that causes them to take some sort of step forward in the direction that they want to go in, and it helps them and their family. And then ultimately that has a ripple effect on the people around them, their community, et cetera. Man, it's totally worth it, dude. So I appreciate you investing the last hour-ish or so here with us, man.
Sure. If I could just say one last thing is, and this might be the advice that I would suggest, is there's really no security in working a 9-to-5. that was one of my things that I learned in the industry I was in. And I always felt that you're taught to believe there's security in working for someone else, and ultimately working for yourself is way more secure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, my friends, again, I so appreciate you. My only ask is that you subscribe to the podcast and then share this with somebody. If you found some value, if you got something from it, we'd love to start a conversation with you on social media. Speaking of, Scott, best place to people, I just put it on the screen, but where's the best place for people to follow you, connect with you? Maybe they have a storage opportunity they want to run by you, or whatever the case might be, man. How can people reach you?
Sure. You can reach me on Facebook, Scott Smith on Facebook.
Yep. And right now, Scott's got a picture. I think you're standing in front of a red Ferrari, right? So, because there's probably a bunch of other Scott Smiths on Facebook, and the URL would have been long. It's got a bunch of characters in it. So look up Scott, just good, genuine dude, an action taker, clearly, as you've seen, and somebody who's very go-giving. So with that said, guys, really looking forward to having you. Make sure you tune into episode 700. That's going to be a solo show, and I got some things I really want to share with you that have been on my heart. And then I have some awesome guests lined up. So I'll be in Italy in a couple of weeks, and I've got some pretty cool guests lined up to share with you just a lot of awesome things that can help you ascend in your life and in your business. That's really the goal and aim of this particular show. So with that said, guys, I will connect with you on the next one. Have an awesome day. Hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, you know, I've had a lot of people recently reach out to me wanting to learn more about Ascend, wanting to understand how the mastermind component works, how the coaching relationship works. And so right now we're actually on a waiting list. But what I would encourage you to do is, if you think you're the right fit and you think you could benefit from being a part of our community, head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, watch the short video, and then just click the apply to join button below. And then we'll be in contact with you if and when a spot opens up. So really appreciate you listening to Flip Empire here. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Take care.